all across America and around the world. Welcome to America's number one veterans program, Veterans Radio. And now, here's your host for today's program, Gary Lilly.
And good morning and welcome to the Veterans Radio Sick Bay. I just got out of intensive care at the VA hospital. Dale's home recovering from a hip operation. Vance, the air boss, is over in the control room.
Oh, I know. We sick list.
Lou, Bob, stay healthy. good morning to that thin green and blue line out there protecting our freedom. Thank you. You modern-day troops, us older guys really admire the job you're doing. You're very good at what you do. Good morning to my veteran brothers and sisters, and welcome home. Good morning to our friends down there, down under. We've got them down there in Tasmania, Australia, New Zealand, and now South America.
Brazil. Sao Paulo.
And it's really nice to hear. And this morning we're going to be talking to Kathleen Ellison, who is the dog handler for Dexter, who just won his freedom. And Kathleen said she heard us over in Afghanistan when she was stationed there.
Wow. Really? Whoa.
Yeah, isn't that cool?
Mm. Yes, and that's vis-a-vis. We've got to tell our listeners. That is the Internet.
On the Internet.
Tell us, Gary, how do they get us on the Internet, for those that are listening terrestrially.
Terrestrially. Oh, wow, big word. Hey, and you were an airborne.
www.veteransradio.net. Be sure it's .net.
.net. And you can listen live, and you can also go back and listen to our archive programs. Bob, it was good to see you this morning over at the Big Boy. You and Vance, nice breakfast over there.
Absolutely, and I want to wish all of our listeners Feliz Cumpleaños y Happy New Year. Prospero.
And every Saturday morning.
6 years of Spanish.
Okay. I only know a couple. Never mind. every Saturday morning, we're over at the Big Boy Restaurant on Plymouth Road at US 23 in Ann Arbor. If you're coming in to visit somebody at the U of M or the U of M Hospital or VA Hospital for any reason at all, stop by at 7 a.m. at the Big Boy and say hello to the Veterans Radio crew. We'd love to see you.
Oh, that's our official pre-production place. And that's on Exit 41. And, of course, they've got everything there in the morning. They've got their wonderful breakfast bar. And you can even have a pie. Some of those Big Boy pies. Strawberry cream, banana cream pies. So go stop on by to the Big Boy Restaurant on Plymouth Road, US 23, Exit 41. Tell them the Veterans Radio guys sent you.
I like that pie. Life's short. Eat dessert first. This morning.
You always have waffles, though.
Waffles, yes. Right. I go for the meat and potatoes stuff. This morning, we're really pleased to have Kathleen Ellison on the program on Veterans Radio. Kathleen, you may have heard us congratulate her earlier this year on her dog, Dexter, getting a reprieve and her being allowed to adopt him from the military. Good morning, Kathleen.
You got to hit the button.
I hit the button. The green
there button. You go.
Hey, there you go. Kathleen, good morning. You got to be smarter than the button, and I was a CB. So, Kathleen.
Well, that explains most of it right there,
yes.
Gary, so I'm sorry. No, I love the CBs.
And everybody loved us, but, it took me many, many decades to figure out why. We worked pretty hard over there.
You did. Well, you built us good houses over there.
And took care of the troops. We did a lot of other things. It was pretty amazing. I look back on it sometimes and wonder how we did what we did. But this is about you, Kathleen, and your dog, Dexter. Tell us about Dexter. Tell us how you came together. What did Dexter do that won the admiration of everybody?
Well, number one, it's all about Dexter. I mean, this guy is phenomenal. I mean, we have great war heroes out there, past and present and future. Of course, we know that's going to happen as well. Hopefully it doesn't, but it probably will. But Dexter and I first became friends when we were stationed at NSA Naples, Italy together from 2003 to 2005. I was partnered with him early spring of 04, and then we were getting ready for a deployment to Iraq in July of 04. So we had 2 months to actually get to know each other pretty good.
The Dexter is credited with saving a bunch of lives.
Yeah, a bunch of them.
Tell us about that.
On the morning of the 31st of July, 2004, Dexter and I had our duty down at the ECP, which is the entry control point at Abu Ghraib prison. At that particular location, of course, you know, a lot of our veterans understand that the dog teams are out there detecting any explosives or narcotics or whatever it has to be on vehicles that are entering the gate. And in Dexter's case, it was explosives. We had a couple vehicles come in about 8:45. There was a particular garbage truck that approached the ECP and was actually sitting in the lane where the people get out of their vehicles and they go to the other side of the barriers and they check in with the Marine Corps personnel that were there and make sure that they're on the list for access to the base. We were tipped off to begin with by one of our Marine Corps brothers that I was working with out there, and he said, the driver is acting a little weird today. I said, well, is he sick? And he's like, no, he's just acting like skittish. So that's always a first clue, you know, when somebody doesn't make direct eye contact with you when you see him every day, that something might be funny. But we just took that and put that in our little pocket, and we continued with our search around the vehicle, and Dexter came upon the passenger side of the garbage truck where the gas tank sits. And he went up on his back legs, as we say, hi or hup or whatever the command is at that time, and he sniffed the far corner of the gas tank. He came down with his passive response, which is his sit response, and that told me that there's something in this vehicle. And I looked at him. You know, because you look at him and you're like, what?
You guys get to know each other pretty well.
Very well. I mean, you have to or you're not worth a,
right.
You know, a dime. But I looked at him, I said, what? And he went back up and showed me the place where he was detecting the explosives and came back down in the sit response again. And after that, the Marines took over. We told the Marines, look, you know, there's a signal that I had for my Marine brothers that were hanging out there doing the personal checks on everybody coming in. And they knew what it was, and they proceeded in their fashion and got the two guys out of the ECP and took them up to their interrogation area. At that time, probably about a half hour later, they found out from these two individuals in the vehicle that they were meeting two other people that had already gained access to the base because they're regular employees. They already gained access to the base, and they were waiting for them at the chow hall to bring this truck around, park it next to the chow hall, along with two or three up to four other garbage trucks there, and they were going to explode it at lunchtime. And Dexter saved an estimate between 800 and 1,000 lives, and that's military personnel, that's DOD civilian people, that's the local nationals that actually, you know, are honest and they working hard for their
yep.
families. And also, his life-saving included me.
Yep.
I mean, because I was down there at the ECP, you know, with
sure.
20 Marines, and then maybe 20, 25 local nationals coming on board. I mean, there's a lot of people down there that he saved.
And what happened then? You and Dexter became separated. You went to Afghanistan, and Dexter was still in Iraq. Is that correct?
No. Actually, what happens, Gary, is that when the handler is coming up for orders or is ready to transfer to another duty station, that dog stays at that command. So Dexter was part of the Naples command as a permanent party member, so to speak. And then I got transferred over to Virginia. And
what happened with Dexter? We'll need to get through to what happened with Dexter and what was the result of it.
Well, I mean, he's 11 years old this month. He's an old boy. A couple years ago, he started having problems with his walking and coordination with his hind legs. He's got DS syndrome, which is a
okay.
degenerative lumbosacral.
And the military was going to do what?
Well, he passed all his tests to become adoptable. However, there were some there were some stipulations on his adoption that myself and another handler were the only ones that could adopt him. And she was already deployed down to Iraq. And I had an opportunity. Because he wouldn't, okay. You know what, his health would deteriorate within the time that I returned from my deployment to get him.
Okay.
So I needed to get him now.
Kathleen, we became involved at Veterans Radio when we got a email from Debbie Candle at militaryworkingdogadoptions.com that you needed help, and we've got about 30 seconds to get through it. What I understand is you put out a call for action and had the people contact the military or their state representatives or congressmen, or is that correct, and receive some help from Congress?
That is correct. We received help from Congressman Hinchy from New York, as well as Congressman Jones out of North Carolina. Wonderful. And also people from around the world emailed and phone calls and the whole nine yards. And happy ending.
Happy ending. And that's we'll have to end it at that. Kathleen, congratulations, and congratulations to Dexter. And I'm really proud that I sent an email when we got the word that you had gotten an early Christmas gift, and finding out that you were going to get Dexter and that you listened to it while you were in Afghanistan.
Yep, I did. And I just want to let everybody know that Dexter will be staying with SaveAVet.org. CEO Danny Scherer has been absolutely wonderful, and he's going to give Dexter his retirement home. And all of his people that are involved in SaveAVet.org have done a wonderful job, as well as Ron Aiello with U.S. War Dogs.
Great.
And Debbie Candle.
And congratulations to all. And Kathleen Ellison, thank you so much for being on Veterans Radio. It's a pleasure to have you. And again, congratulations on a happy future for Dexter.
Thank you very much, Gary. It's my honor to be on your radio station. And to all the vets, Godspeed.
Thank you. Bob, we're going to, we've got some troops to welcome home. Is that correct?
Whoa, yes, we do, Gary. Each week on Veterans Radio, we welcome home servicemen and women who've been stationed in around the world in the service of their country. Dateline Fort Campbell, Kentucky. 180 soldiers from the 101st Combat Aviation Brigade will be turned home from a month deployment to Afghanistan. Other returning units include the 101st Division Special Troops Battalion, the 86th Combat Support Hospital, and the 326th Engineer Battalion. The 101st DSTB has been in Afghanistan for 15 months, and 86 CSH and 326 EB have been in Iraq for 12 months. Wow. Isn't it great when they have all these wonderful little codes here?
I've always said CBs.
I took this right off the wire, too.
We're pretty simple people. It's MCB1, MCB2.
Well, EB, Engineer Battalion, right?
Okay.
DSTB was the Division Special Troops Battalion. So that's the way the 101st were born. Okay. Dateline, Wisconsin. Two-year-old Gabriel Kernan got exactly what he wanted for Christmas this year. No, it wasn't packaged in pretty ribbons or bows, nor did it consist of a toy or a game. What Gabriel wanted arrived on a plane. His mother returned from active duty. Quote, he was at the airport with a big sign that said, "Welcome home, Mommy." His mother, Air Force Captain Kate Kernan, said, when he saw me, he said, "Mommy, Mommy, Mommy," ran over to me and gave me a big hug. It was pretty cool. Captain Kernan is a graduate of the Air Force Academy and was placed on active duty in 2001. She serves as a C-130 pilot. How about that, eh?
Hmm? Oh, the military's changed.
Yes, it has. And by the way, I have some photos. I think I'm going to put them up on Veterans Radio of a crew of C-130.
Show it now.
All female crew. I will do that. Dateline, Arizona, Fort Huachuca. With an arrow painted on a sign, Marlon Gonzalez had a message for her father. "Daddy, I'm here." Not to be outdone, her five-year-old brother, Angel, held up a sign also saying, "Me too, Dad." Their father, Sergeant Gus Gonzalez, was one of 135 soldiers of the 11th Signal Brigade's headquarters company to return to the post after 15 months in Iraq. Dateline, Cap Shelby, Mississippi. A large and happy contingent of 39th Infantry Brigade Combat Team, of the Arkansas National Guard. Their families are celebrating the return of more than 3,200 soldiers from a year-long deployment in support of Operation Iraqi Freedom. Nearly 900 Arkansas National Guard troops have been deployed, and they have begun their demobilization process in Gulfport, Mississippi. Dateline Newport News, Virginia. 249 troops of the headquarters and headquarters company, 7th Sustainment Brigade, arrived in Anderson Fieldhouse at Fort Eustis, Virginia. A brief official welcoming ceremony included remarks from Brigadier General Kevin Magnum, the division rear commander of the 10th Mountain Division at Fort Drum, New York. The unit supported military operations and provided convoy escorts and other tasks for the combat teams and coalition forces in Iraq. Welcome Home is brought to you each week by the Marine Scholars Program of Ave Maria University.
You have honorably served the United States and the Marine Corps in times of peace and war. Now we would like to serve you. The Marine Scholars Program covers the total cost of attending Ave Maria University. By combining resources from the Ave Maria University Marine Scholars Funding, federal financial aid entitlements, and the GI Bill, the benefits are granted for the duration of the recipient's study at Ave Maria University, contingent upon good conduct and good academic standing. The Marine Scholars Program is open to all reserve and active component Marines and other combat veterans of Operation Enduring Freedom and Operation Iraqi Freedom who have honorably served our country. Please visit us online at www.avemaria.edu or call the Assistant Director of Admissions at 239-280-2552. You helped us. Now let us help you. Semper Fi.
An investor recently said, "This is the best real estate market I've ever seen." At Sperry Van Ness Lilly & Associates, we've seen tough markets in the past and know you can benefit from them. We don't see tough, we see opportunity. We know the quickest way for buyers to achieve wealth is created in a buyer's market, and this is the best market we've seen for buyers in decades. We'll help you select, analyze, finance solid real estate investments. That's why Sperry Van Ness brokers are known as real estate advisors. Call Sperry Van Ness Lilly & Associates for a professional discussion about your investment goals. We'll locate properties we believe best fit you, then you decide if you agree. Call 800-345-6694. That's 800-345-6694. Visit our website, svnlillie.com.
We're back on Veterans Radio. Welcome, and really pleased to welcome Harvey Williams, who was a survivor of the Battle of Pork Chop Hill. There was a movie made of it starring Gregory Peck. The book written by General S.L.A. Marshall, Slam Marshall, who was a military historian. It was just spellbinding. I remember reading it when I was in high school. I don't remember too many of the details other than the fact that this was a ferocious battle. Harvey Williams, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Good morning.
Good morning. You were an artillery observer, were you?
Yes.
And there were two battles of Pork Chop Hill. One was in April when it's still cold in Korea, and the other one was in July of 1953. And it took place, it ended about 3 weeks before the armistice was signed. This was just positioning by both countries. And you guys were the pawns, quite frankly. Is that right? Do you recall that?
Yes.
And you were awarded the Silver Star. We'll get into that in a moment. But as
Bronze Star, excuse me.
I'm sorry, Bronze Star. You look more like a hero than anybody that earns anything of that nature. I've listened to a few guys when they do tell their stories very quietly. The hair will stand up on the back of your neck, literally, listening to. And there are so many guys that deserve them that never got them. The bravery that takes place on the battlefield is astounding. Tell us what an artillery observer does. I always had this image that you guys stayed way in the back a couple hundred yards with the binoculars and told them where to shoot, but that's not really what you guys did, is it?
Well, you were on the line, right on the main line of resistance.
You were right up there in the trenches.
Yes.
And during the Korean War, it was more of a throwback to World War One than World War Two. Towards the latter years of the war, it was a battle of trench warfare and bunkers, and Pork Chop Hill was one of that types of a position. Is that right?
Yes, there were bunkers that we lived in, only to observe the action in front of you all the time. And during the action, you were able to protect your troops because you knew when they were moving troops, when the Koreans were moving about. It was at a great distance from where we stayed, but about every night you left your position and went into the, I forget the term, it's been a little so long.
Sure.
But it's the...
What, in the bunkers or trenches?
You left your bunkers and you walked out, you formed a patrol and walked out to see if 200 or 300 yards to see if you could find anyone from the opposition.
You would go two, three hundred yards in front of your bunkers.
Yes.
Well, for the listeners, you should be aware that at that time in the war, the American Army decided that they wanted to create a line of outposts in front of the main line of resistance. So Pork Chop Hill and Old Baldy and some of the other hills were out in front of our main lines, and sticking out there like the proverbial sore thumb and very exposed all around by the enemy. And yet what you're saying is you went a couple hundred yards beyond that.
Yeah, that was in the evening. You would be out to see if they had any troops about. But you were in full view all the time.
Of them or us?
Them.
Of them, yeah. And they probably got irritated. The when that battle opened, I was astounded at how much it resembled the World War One battles. When the Chinese opened their attack on Pork Chop Hill and Old Baldy, they opened up with an artillery barrage of 8,000 rounds of artillery. Were you there at the time when that broke loose?
Part of the time. We were coming up because of the action at that time. We were to reinforce Pork Chop Hill.
We being your company?
Yes.
The Americans took horrendous casualties. There was the battle waged back and forth with the Chinese taking the hill and then the Americans retaking the hill and attack, counterattack. What would you do during that period of time?
Well, during that time, I was going up to retake the hill. It had already been taken. I was going up to retake the hill.
So you were moving up with the grunts,
yes,
with the riflemen?
Through the trenches, up through the trenches to some bunkers we had on top of the hill. To me, that was always silly. A bunker on top of the hill, that told you something.
Yeah, it's like, hey, here we are.
Yeah.
It got into some hand-to-hand fighting. Were you? Did you observe any of that? You saw the
Chinese enemy coming over up the hill. We were going coming up one side, and they were coming up. They were coming down up the north side, I guess it was, and we were on the south side of Pork Chop, coming up the trenches.
You guys were on the south side and they were on the north side.
That's right. And we went up, and about the time we got on top, you could see them, and they scurried for bunkers at that time. And we kind of pinned them down right there.
With artillery or with...
With small arms fire.
How many were there, do you estimate?
When you look at the Chinese coming, there were just hordes of them. They never tried to attack that in small numbers. They would run up the hill with grenades, only grenades, and try and get close enough to you to throw a grenade. I don't know where the weapons were. Maybe they didn't have them. But they would run up, throw a grenade, and run back if they could make it.
That's up close and personal.
Oh, yeah. No.
How close do you think you are to...
how far can you throw a grenade? It was an old-type grenade, like a potato masher grenade. I'm sure you've heard of those.
Oh, yeah. That was like the Germans.
That's kind of grenades used.
That's modeled like the Germans in World War II with a wooden handle and a grenade at the end of it.
Correct.
So that you could throw them further.
Yeah.
And you were calling in artillery on them? Or?
Yes.
The How effective was our artillery?
Very good. We were using VT, variable time, which explodes above the ground.
Oh.
And
airburst.
Yes. Anti-personnel.
I read in some of the statistics that they lost somewhere around 1,200 men, and they had about 4,000 wounded during the battle, which lasted, it's not like it lasted for a couple of hours. That battle lasted for days, is that correct?
It lasted a long time. But by the time it was completely over, the officer in charge of our unit and the wireman, the forward delivery unit consisted of four people, a jeep driver, a wireman, a reconnaissance sergeant, that's what I was, and an officer. And by that time, we had lost the recon sergeant and wounded the officer. So we were leaving and being replaced.
I know there were a couple of medals of honor awarded during that battle posthumously, meaning they were deceased when they were awarded the Medal of Honor. And there were 13 companies involved, and four of the company commanders were killed. There were tremendous casualties on the side of the Americans, besides on the side of the Chinese.
Well, you were out in the open, so there wasn't very much protection at all. If you didn't find a bunker to sit in or a trench, you were exposed quite a bit, so that's not surprising.
Did you ever, in order to call in, you had to have a wire stringing behind you. It was not wireless, correct?
Well, it was PRC
okay.
1 or something like that. I don't know, but it was a new type radio we had, and we were lucky because the old type radio had a 6-foot copper fixed antenna on it. And you talk about, ask me where you are, and we know what you're doing. That was kind of funny, but we got these new radios, and they only had probably a two or three foot flexible antenna, like a tape measure antenna.
You were a radio telephone operator, and I've always heard that another term for that is target.
Well, with a 6-foot copper antenna, that's what I felt, like a target.
We're talking to Harvey Williams, who is a survivor of the famous Battle of Pork Chop Hill, if famous is the word to use, during the latter days of the Korean War, when both sides were negotiating a peace treaty and they were using these various hills as pawns. And Harvey, you were awarded the Bond Star. We'll be back with Harvey's story right after this break coming up. You're listening to Veterans Radio on Ave Maria Radio. We'll be right back after this message.
The Medal of Honor is the highest award for valor in combat given a member of the Armed Forces of the United States. There have been over 3,400 recipients of the nation's highest award. This is one of them. Staff Sergeant Lucian Adams came face to face with a German gunner and thought he was a goner. Details after this.
The first job you choose in life could make or break your future. Making that decision takes facts. Here's a fact. The U.S. Air Force offers valuable training, higher education, medical care, and experience. So when it's time to choose your career, check out the Air Force. For more information, call 1-800-423-USAF or log on at airforce.com. Cross into the blue with the U.S. Air Force. No one comes close.
Two assault companies of the 3rd Infantry Division were cut off from the main force. Adams of Port Arthur, Texas, was tasked by his company commander to make a breakthrough to get to the companies. Carrying a Browning automatic rifle, he began walking with his men down the road. Barely 10 yards down the road, they came under fire. 3 of his men were killed immediately, and 6 were wounded. Adams killed the first gunner with a grenade. Another popped up a few feet away, and Adams killed him with his rifle. Charging into fire of the second machine gun, he killed its gunner with another grenade and forced 2 infantrymen to surrender. When he got within range of the 3rd machine gunner and the gunner began shooting, Adams thought he was gone. The gunner missed, but Adams didn't. When he'd finished his rampage, the woods were clear. His men called him the Tornado of Texas. Adams received his Medal of Honor in Nuremberg's Zeppelin Stadium. An American flag was draped over a huge swastika, and after the ceremony, American engineers removed the flag and blew up the swastika. The Medal of Honor series is produced by Veterans Radio.
Parker Yacht Sales, the East Coast's finest dealer of Chris Craft, Island Packet Yachts, Packet Craft, Parker Fishing Boats, and Nautic Star Boats. Schrader Yachts is located at the top of Barnicot Bay in Point Pleasant, New Jersey. Our good friend Ray Schrader provides you, the customer, with over 30 years' experience in boat sales, sail, and power boats, both new and used. Schrader Yacht Sales offers a full-service storage facility and a reliable crew responsible for all of your boating needs. Specialists in electronics, they can accommodate your needs for radar, autopilot, air conditioning, GPS, heat, and communications. Give Ray a call at 732-899-8010. That's 732-899-8010, or go to SchraderYachts.com. That's SchraderYachts.com. Oh, by the way, tell Ray you heard about him on Veterans Radio, and he will personally deliver your new boat from Schrader Yachts anywhere there's water. Schrader Yachts, ready to serve all of your boating needs.
We're back on Veterans Radio. We're talking to Harvey Williams, who is a participant in the Battle of Pork Chop Hill, the second Battle of Pork Chop Hill in the Korean War, immortalized or memorialized in a movie that was starred Gregory Peck. And, Harvey, we were talking about it off the air. What you don't remember too much about the movie, but what was your general impression when you saw the movie? Was it accurate? Did it show the terrain and the actions of the American soldier very well?
Well, the terrain was pretty much correct. It's just a hill, a pimple in the earth that somebody decided was very, very important to them. And we were dug in bunkers and trenches around there. Oh.
Didn't look like there was a blade of grass on it, just a bunch of big rocks.
I don't remember any grass at all. Salt, dust.
And you guys had to, the Chinese were at the top of the hill at that point, and you guys had to go up after them. Is that right?
We were approaching the top of the hill from both sides. We met when the Chinese had not quite made it to the top. They were on a slope maybe 10 or 15 yards down the hill on the north side, and we were coming up. We achieved the top first. And then our job was to keep them from coming up. And I remember the action of this infantry lieutenant. I'll never forget his name. He was a West Point officer named Smith. He had a brother who was a pilot in Korea. And I just knew that from talking to him, there was a lot of communication between he and I, because he would tell me where he wanted me to shoot. And I would relay that message back to my officer from the artillery, and you have a very good relationship with somebody who wanted you to clear the area.
It's all about communication, isn't
it? Oh, yeah. And I felt so lucky because I had a new radio at the time.
You guys actually had to take part in the assault on the bunkers, is that correct?
Oh, yes.
How did that, what do you do?
Well, I just follow orders. Lieutenant Smith was very explicit on what he wanted done.
Yeah, which was?
He said, cross over the top of this hill, and meet them coming up. They're hiding in that bunker there. And there weren't very many people ready to go. So he said, take a grenade, pull the pin out, throw the pin away. Now you've got to get rid of that grenade for words to effect. So you had to charge over the hill, run over the hill, throw the grenade in that bunker, and get back without getting your tail shot off. So I was very much in awe of this officer because of things I had seen him do. And our communication skills were very good. He would ask me, he was constantly asking me, do you know where you are? It was important for me to know where I was in relation to the terrain, because he would ask me to shoot in an area. He and I talked a lot before we went on patrol. So we would, like there was a tree. Now, a tree doesn't sound very important, but when a place has been shelled for so long, there are not many trees left. So a tree was a checkpoint for us. He'd say 100 yards or 10 yards to the right of the tree, or by the rock. There was an outcropping of rocks. And those were points that I had to know and he had to know so we could orient ourselves to where to shoot around when we were out on patrol.
And in order to call in artillery, you have to be able to read a map and you have to be able to read coordinates.
Your coordinates are very, very important.
And I was shown how to read coordinates on a military map by a lieutenant colonel that I had coffee with not too long ago. And I saw, oh, wow, it kind of is simple. You know, I never did understand it before. However, I was sitting in a coffee shop looking at the map, you were out there under attack with the stress of the enemy swarming at you, and I mean literally swarming at you. You had to keep a cool head, so you called in the artillery on the right place and not on your own men. Is that right?
That happens. Be right.
Theoretically.
If you call on your own men, you're silly. You don't want to try and do that. And if you did, you received a lot of feedback from the office, from the infantrymen.
Feedback.
But how are you?
Feedback is kind of probably a mild way of putting it.
The language was how explosive.
Yeah, I bet you. How difficult is it to remain calm in a moment like this and call in the correct coordinates?
Well, you've been trained not to pay a lot of attention to things that might ordinarily put you in panic, like his rounds coming in. They were very deadly, and you knew they were only hitting areas. So if you were unlucky, your area got hit, but they weren't probably shooting directly at you because they didn't know where you were going to be. Does that make sense? I was moving.
When you were calling in the artillery, I should establish this. How far away was the enemy?
Oh, it could be anywhere from 20 yards to 100 yards. It depends on whether you were in place and you see where someone is firing. You do a lot of calculations at time, too. When a round comes in, you know where it hit and probably the direction it's going. So you, what you call it, shoot a back azimuth. Somewhere along the line back there, there's a piece of equipment shooting at you. A gun, big gun.
Right.
And then that's where you'd aim for. That was your... And you would find that on the map. Your map was folded into a very small section, really. You weren't looking at an unfolded map, travel map. You were just looking at an area.
You didn't have it. You didn't need a distraction as to what was going on at the next hill.
No.
Your hill is the one that was important to you. And so you've got enemies swarming. They're within 20 yards of you at time, and you're calling in artillery. The noise had to be horrendous.
It was.
And so... there were air bursts, there were ground bursts.
No, coming to us,
right.
That they were shooting was all ground bursts. They did not have the VT, variable time. The variable time was an electronic shell, and it shot a signal out. As it was coming down, it sent out a signal which reflected on the earth and came back and exploded the shell. So it exploded probably about 20 feet over your head, something like that.
And that was their rounds there? They were shooting air bursts, too?
No.
That was you guys shooting air bursts.
They did not have air bursts. We did.
Fortunate for you, because I read that during this second battle of Porkchop Hill, they fired 40,000 rounds of artillery at you. Were you aware of those numbers?
No.
Probably glad you didn't know, right?
Probably 40,000.
That's a pretty astounding. Of course, you know, it was spread out between Old Baldy and one other hill, too.
Well, Baldy was far away from us, for I was at the time.
At the time, the Chinese and North Koreans had 290,000 men on the line and 600,000 in reserve. I assume that at that point, it probably felt like they were throwing all of them against you personally.
Well, the one thing that I think about a lot is that... The padded suits that the Chinese and Koreans wore looked like rag dolls after the VT hit them. It just tore their uniform up.
Left the
so it just looked like a bunch of rag dolls, a wide number of rag dolls laying out in the open that had been hit by a VT. The shrapnel from the VT shell just tore the cloth up or the uniform up.
And yet they kept coming.
Well, they were dead then.
Well, I mean, the ones behind them.
So what they would do, they would come and pick up the grenade, the potato masher grenade, and keep charging with the grenade. They didn't all have grenades, and they didn't all have guns. They had, when somebody got shot, they picked that one up.
And they were pretty disciplined soldiers.
Dedicated,
right. We're talking to Harvey Williams, who was a participant in the Battle of Porkchop Hill and the latter days of the Korean War. Harvey was an artillery observer, and if you ever want to get a pretty good picture of what took place, there's a movie out that was highly acclaimed called Porkchop Hill. Gregory Peck was in it, and it gives you a pretty good feel, I think, from what I've heard as to what the terrain was like and what the fighting was like. It was not long-range stuff. It was hand-to-hand at times. You're listening to Veterans Radio on Ave Maria Radio. We'll be right back after this last break.
You have honorably served the United States and the Marine Corps in times of peace and war. Now we would like to serve you. The Marine Scholars Program covers the total cost of attending Ave Maria University. By combining resources from the Ave Maria University Marine Scholars Funding, federal financial aid entitlements, and the GI Bill, the benefits are granted for the duration of the recipient's study at Ave Maria University, contingent upon good conduct and good academic standing. The Marine Scholars Program is open to all reserve and active component Marines and other combat veterans of Operation Enduring Freedom and Operation Iraqi Freedom who have honorably served our country. Please visit us online at www.avemaria.edu or call the Assistant Director of Admissions at 239-280-2552. You helped us. Now let us help you. Semper Fi.
An investor recently said, "This is the best real estate market I've ever seen." At Sperry Van Ness Lilly & Associates, we've seen tough markets in the past and know you can benefit from them. We don't see tough, we see opportunity. We know the quickest way for buyers to achieve wealth is created in a buyer's market, and this is the best market we've seen for buyers in decades. We'll help you select, analyze, finance solid real estate investments. That's why Sperry Van Ness brokers are known as real estate advisors. Call Sperry Van Ness Lilly & Associates for a professional discussion about your investment goals. We'll locate properties we believe best fit you, then you decide if you agree. Call 800-345-6694. That's 800-345-6694. Visit our website, svnlillie.com.
We're back on Veterans Radio. We're talking to Harvey Williams, who was a participant in the Second Battle of Pork Chop Hill, which was about a 3 or 4 day battle that took place 3 days before the armistice was signed, putting a halt to the Korean War. There's never been a peace treaty signed. Technically, North Korea and South Korea are still at war with each other. And just so you know how dangerous that is, since the end of shooting at the end of the Korean War, Americans that are still up there on the line, we still have units up there, we have had over 1,400 men killed along the DMZ in the Korean Peninsula. And so Harvey Williams participated in the Battle of Pork Chop Hill. You were a artillery observer. You called in artillery. You had a radio that was connected by wire. It wasn't wireless. And
yes, it was wireless then.
It was wireless.
Yes, we had two wires. We used a wireless until we could establish communication with the wire.
Oh, with the wire. And periodically that wire would be cut by their artillery. Is that correct?
Theirs or ours.
Theirs. Well, it shows you how close in the artillery support was if you're cutting your own wire with it.
One time we called in, I did, fire on myself. That's when they're coming so close and surrounding you. At one point they were running by a bunker we were in, and they would just shoot into the bunker.
Kind of difficult to talk about it at times, if I can understand. We'll give you a second to get composed. The fighting was ferocious, and Harvey was 20 years old at the time, having to remain calm and do your job when you had artillery or when you had Chinese swarming all around you. And I know this brings back some very, very difficult memories at time. We spoke a few days ago, and you said, you know, I hadn't thought much about it until just recently. And now you're starting to think about it. Is that right?
Yep. Yes.
You were going to be on the program several months ago, but you're a tough guy. You don't look like John Wayne, but you were a tough guy. I got a phone call the night before that you'd had a lot of pain in your back for about a month, and finally went in to get it checked out, and it turned out you had a broken back. And so you went around for a month. You're 76 years old, is that right? Went around for about a month with a broken back, and then called and said that you you couldn't make it because of that. And your good friend Bill Oltrusdorf filled in for you, and he talked about the Chosin Reservoir and his time in the Marines that he was fighting over in Korea. Afterwards, he said to me, "Gary, I can't do this again. This will be the last time I'll ever talk about it." Is that, I assume that's sort of what you're going through right now.
I just remembered something today that I hadn't thought of.
Do you care to talk about it or not?
Like Bill. Bill had the elements to fight at the same time. He was fighting in very sub-zero weather. But this is when we were inside, trapped inside the bunker. The Chinese were running back and forth, spraying machine guns in. And in those bunkers, we had cots set up, camo wire cots, that stakes driven in the ground, wired together to sleep on. And on this one cot, a GI was on top of it, and he was dead, not very long. But blood was dripping down from the top cot, which is where he was, on us. And I couldn't figure out how they could kill him and not me.
There's no explaining what takes place in a war at times. There's why one person gets it and the one next to him doesn't. And after that, the person that lived is just racked with survivor guilt and asking that question, why did I make it and he didn't? I assume that's what you're going through at the moment.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll give you a little bit of time to gather up.
Well, I'm okay now, I think.
You're okay. All right.
Tell
us about the people you served with.
Well, a good many years later, let's see if I can put it in the time frame. When I retired from my General Motors job, I took a trip down south. I had promised a lieutenant that I worked with that if I ever got down in West Virginia, I would stop and see him. My wife and I decided to take a trip to California right after I retired, so we made a point to go and see him. And I had lost contact with him. But when I got there, I went through the phone book. His name was Bruce, Lieutenant Bruce. Such a fine man. And good at what he did. He was an artillery observer also, but he was a first lieutenant. I went through the telephone book, and I called every Bruce who was in that phone book. And I got his son, and he said we'd meet with him. He acted kind of strange to start off with. He said his father had just died about 3 or 4 months ago.
Hmm.
I never did get a chance to see him again.
I can imagine the pain, knowing that you'd missed him. But just a friend of mine constantly told me about a friend of his in the 101st Airborne, and he wondered about him and where he was and what he was doing. And he called me one day, and he said that they had a reunion coming up, and he said, "Guess who's going to be there?" And he told me about his friend. And 2 days before the reunion, his friend died, and it was just devastating to him. I know what you mean about calling. Do you know what I did? I had a guy in my squad named Bill Doherty. He was my favorite guy. And he was from Boston, but I thought for some reason he settled down in California. I literally called every Bill Doherty, starting up there around the Oregon coast and working down to San Diego. Turns out he was in Boston.
I met his son. We had breakfast. And after we'd been there about a half an hour, his wife came. She hadn't wanted to come to start off with. Now, I'm sure I got out of the service probably around in my 20s. And I was in my 60s. I was 60 when I retired. So 40 years later.
40 years. And I've always said it's been 42 for me. And I'll say about Vietnam that it's been so long now, it feels like last week instead of yesterday. Yeah. Harvey, the clock's ticking down, and I know it's getting a bit more difficult to talk about it all the time. I want to really thank you for agreeing to be on Veterans Radio. And the story that you told about yourself, you're not talking about yourself. You're talking about all the people that you served with. And there's a company is over 200 men, and it could be 240 men. And I know that during that battle, some of the companies were down to 5 and 10 men. And so that's the ferociousness of the fighting and against the Chinese.
When we left to come home that night, or to leave that part of the battle, we were replaced by another company, and our whole company left the front line in 1 2.5-ton truck. That's all that was left.
And we're going to leave it at that. And folks, you'll never know when you meet a hero on the street. They don't look like a hero, but the things that they have seen. And so you've been listening to the Battle of Pork Chop Hill, Harvey Williams, who was a participant in it. And we want to thank you for being here. Come back next week for another fascinating interview. Veterans Radio, right here on Ave Maria Radio, every Saturday at 9 a.m. Eastern. If you miss our program, go to veteransradio.net and pick it up on the archives. Thanks for being with us.
The opinions or views expressed in this program are not necessarily of Veterans Radio or the station. Veterans Radio is a production of Veterans Radio, LLC.
Trader Yacht Sales, the East Coast's finest dealer of Chris Craft, Island Packet Yachts, Packet Craft, Parker Fishing Boats, and Nautic Star Boats. Trader Yachts is located at the top of Barnicot Bay in Point Pleasant, New Jersey. Our good friend Ray Schrader provides you, the customer, with over 30 years' experience in boat sales, sail and power boats, both new and used. Trader Yacht Sales offers a full-service storage facility and a reliable crew responsible for all of your boating needs. Specialists in electronics, they can accommodate your needs for radar, autopilot, air conditioning, GPS, heat, and communications. Give Ray a call at 732-899-8010. That's 732-899-8010, or go to SchraderYachts.com. That's SchraderYachts.com. Oh, by the way, tell Ray you heard about him on Veterans Radio, and he will personally deliver your new boat.